You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Hello and welcome again to Because Miami, rock on tour and rabble rouser activist Billy Corbin with us as he is for Because Miami all the time. We've got a lot of terrain to cover here. We've got a Tower Theater in Little Havana that should be a landmark that is getting bleeped with. We've got Ron DeSantis doing more questionable things. We've got Ocean Drive being patrolled by horseback because that's what's needed here during spring break. But before we get to any of that stuff, before we get to Ari Cohn and his feud with John Ruiz, let's start with the Circle of Brotherhood. Billy, tell the people who do not know what the Circle of Brotherhood is.
We've talked about this on the program before. It's a black-led nonprofit organization that does really important work in what I would argue is not the underserved black community of Miami, but the unserved black community of Miami. This is an organization that gets hundreds of thousands of dollars a year from a variety of sources, state, local, federal, and does a lot of work that the government just simply fails to do in these communities and in these neighborhoods in Miami. Miami, as I continue to remind you, despite what you see on TV and, you know, music videos, Miami is one of the poorest cities in the country. And so we need organizations like this to pick up the slack from a government. And Miami is a place where, you know, we often talk about, you know, African-Americans being treated as second class citizens. In Miami, we have a majority minority community in power in the public sector and the private sector. And what has happened effectively is that African Americans have become third class citizens in Miami-Dade. They don't have a lot of representation. They don't have a lot of attention. They don't get a lot of money.
They've been promised $1 million, correct? That the city of Miami continues to bleep with them.
In October of 21, so not last October, but two Octobers ago, Mayor Ponzi Postalita, Francis Suarez, invited the Circle of Brotherhood to City Hall and presented them with a giant cardboard ceremonial check from Mayor Francis Suarez to the Circle of Brotherhood for $1 million, okay? And that was in October of 21. 1 year later, the Circle of Brotherhood shows up to a city commission meeting that just this past October of 22, and they hadn't received a single penny and, in fact, saw an item on the agenda, not for $1 million, but maybe they would consider up to $250,000.
Now, the mayor of Miami called us here, said that he was awarding the Circle of Brotherhood some funding because of the work that we've been doing in the community. When we got here, he unveiled a check for $1 million. It was all on his social media. It was all in the newspaper. In fact, even to this day, people still think we got this money. They think we got the money. We get an email from the budget office saying it's $250,000. You know, one time a commissioner called me ungrateful because I had the audacity to ask for a little more money. I was ungrateful because I wanted a little more money to serve my community. I was ungrateful. So maybe you might call me ungrateful again today. The mayor promised us $1 million. We want $1 million. We're not taking $250,000. So if $250,000 is on the agenda for us to take it, we don't want it. We are not going to take less than what we are worth anymore in the black community. The budget department sent me an email saying it's not $1 million anymore. It's $250,000. We don't want the $250,000. We're not trading anything for $250,000. We're not trading who we are. The brotherhood, You know what? We ain't bowing down.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are not.
That was Leroy Jones, the head organizer for the Circle of Brotherhood. A rather extraordinary display at City Hall, rarely seen from an organization that's being considered for a six-figure contribution, but he stood his ground. And the Circle of Brotherhood has been an outspoken critic of the City Commission's takeover of the majority black board of the Virginia Key Park Trust. Remember, we talked about that here before. We talked about the historic black beach in Miami, the only beach actually in the border of the city of Miami, and how the City Commission just basically purged the black people from this board and said, we're going to take over this $1 million budget and still not move forward on the Black History Museum we've been promised and we actually voted for to be taxed for 20 years ago. So now we are 3 months later after that audio, 15 months since Mayor Francis Suarez promised and presented them the ceremonial $1 million. And now they show up again to a City Commission meeting where they are put through the ringer for 46 minutes, the Circle of Brotherhood, being asked dumb questions, being confronted with just the most ignorant bile, particularly from Commissioners Alex Diaz La Portilla and notorious racist Joe Carollo. He's a white beater, white beater. Yeah, that's Joe Carollo. Also arrested for domestic violence, you may recall, Dan.
I think the music spoke for itself. So, it was unnecessarily redundant. You don't really need to explain the music. The music is pretty self-explanatory.
Oh, wow. It's a nice falsetto there, Roy.
Thank you.
So these guys come back. They're asked just circular questions. They have to, like, show their bank account. By the way, the $1 million is an allocation of the City Commission. These guys still have to spend money and then put in for reimbursements. And the city, receipt by receipt, has to review whether or not they're going to give them this money up to $1 million. It's this very, like, intricate process. Nobody gets treated this way in the city of Miami. But listen to this.
For the record, no other organization under the 2021 ARPA regulations has been put through this. Not one, except us. But they
will
mind.
But they will be, because we have to make sure we spend
it's
our resources.
It's too late, because they already were approved last January, remember?
That's not what's happened. I remember.
Okay.
What's happened is they're asking us.
Is there anything
specifics.
Else you'd like to know about the Circle of Brotherhood?
I'd like to know how much money you receive from different governmental entities so we can make an informed decision.
So
on
I've already named in excess three times the amount that this is for.
Okay.
So this is really becoming what it is publicly. So we see you for what you are. Just make a vote on it. Just make a vote on it.
I'm not sure you want that.
Excuse me, sir?
I'm not sure you want that.
You're not sure I want that?
Yeah.
Now that's on record, sir.
Of course on the record.
We're in the same position where we are. Everybody sees what's going on here. So we're going to tell you one more time. Allow us to do what we do, or just vote no, and we'll continue to do it without you.
Very aggressive.
I don't need attitude.
Oh.
When do you think that you will have
excuse me.
Uppity, huh?
Some of the money. Well, so you could begin doing some of the
work. We have that in our account now, sir, and I find that kind of insulting because, again.
Well, I'm sorry,
because,
sir.
Again.
I'm sorry that you find it
insulting. May I answer the question?
Happy Black History Month.
We have more than a sufficient amount of funds in our bank account right now to cover any reimbursement that we could possibly get from the City of Miami.
Regardless of how much of money the contract is, if we can't spend the money, then we can't access it, and the money goes back to the city. So nothing is lost. Or if we do something that's not accepted under the contract, then we don't get reimbursed for it.
That last voice was Leroy Jones again. Before that, that very powerful voice was Lyle Muhammad, the executive director of the Circle of Brotherhood. And you can see that this is 46 minutes of this from these guys. And we have a Cuban diaspora museum fully funded. Nobody knows where that money goes. It's like an ongoing telenovela over there. We have a Brigade 2506 museum and a second one coming. Brigade 2506, they're going to get property from the city for affordable housing. They also want to give them the Tower Theater over to them, which the Brigade doesn't want. But, like, my point is that there are organizations who come in and get money all the time from the city. And by the way, they just gift the money. They just give the money. These guys, even if they got this allocation, they still have to jump through every possible hoop to get check after check after check. They may never even get $1 million reimbursed. But regardless, they ultimately lose because they needed a supermajority of commissioners, which is 4 out of 5. But because there's no fifth commissioner right now, because Russell resigned and they're awaiting a special election for District 2, they needed all 4 commissioners. They needed a totally unanimous vote. And you'll hear right off the bat, Alex Diaz-Labortia votes against it, which means it's already over. Doesn't matter if everybody else votes for it. It's already over. After 45 minutes of bullshit, we get this totally self-serving remark from racist Joe Carollo.
Happy Black History Month.
Here's the clip.
Commissioner Diaz-Labortia?
No.
Commissioner Carollo?
This is very concerning to me. Respect for the chair. I'm going to vote for it, but
yeah.
This is not something that I would normally vote for. The city
no shit.
Does not have the personnel to go through so many different accounts that they have to supervise and look at. And frankly, a lot of our personnel don't have the stomach to do what's right when they see things that are wrong. So with that, I would vote a very unhappy yes.
He's referring to the chairwoman, Christine King, the only black commissioner on the dais who is supporting this item. But of course, it's total bullshit because he knows it already failed. It's a safe yes for him to say, oh, I'm scratching your back, chairwoman. Now you owe me one, which is total bunk because the thing already failed. So he gets to do the racist thing and appear to do the right thing all at the same time while not blaming this organization for any impropriety, but claiming that the city itself doesn't have the manpower or woman power and that even the man and woman power they have are incompetent and corrupt and won't do the right thing when confronted with it, which is remarkable when you consider, Dan, to just use one example off the top of my head, the Mel Reese lease, which is a multi-billion dollar real estate transaction. If they can handle that and enforce that, the city is able to negotiate that deal, paper that lease, and then enforce that lease, then surely they can handle drips and drabs of $1,000 here, $10,000 here, $100,000 here, up to $1 million to reimburse these guys for helping the inner city of Miami.
Okay, excellent dismount by him. Just total exasperation, runs out of words. That rarely happens.
Allow us to segue
into other subject matter as Billy gets more and more exasperated. Tower Theater in Little Havana. Tell people the history of this theater, why it matters, why it's important, and why it's in peril.
The Tower Theater on Cayo Ocho first opened in 1926. It was a state-of-the-art theater. It probably, not probably, very likely, since it wound up as the epicenter, the beating heart of Little Havana, of the Cuban exile community of Miami, when they first started migrating, this is probably the first connection with the most important pop culture form in American history, the cinema. The first place that Cuban exiles got to see what the magic of the movies looked like in a free country, in a democracy like the United States. So there's a lot of history there. It is a historic site. It is one of the few historic sites in Miami that has functioned, even when it closed for a while and then reopened in 2002. It's always functioned as a movie theater. A lot of these historic sites, they leave the facade, but they bulldoze the interior and it becomes a nightclub or a, you know, the Paris Theater here on, you know, Washington.
This is old, feels old. It's wonderfully charming, tiny, and you can feel all 100 years in it.
But modernized, because since 2002, Miami-Dade College has operated it as the leaseholder here. The city is the landowner and the landlord. And so they have operated this continuously since 2002 as a theater. They've invested well over $1 million in equipment and refurbishing it and making it a state-of-the-art modern digital projection facility. They've done fabulous film festival events, movie premieres with celebrities and politicians. They've shown movies that have probably never screened on movie theaters and Spanish language movies that not screened in movie theaters in the entire United States. They have done there. And as we reported last year, as the Miami-Dade College's lease was coming to an end at the end of 2022, the city decided they would not be renewing the lease and the city would be taking it over and turning it into a tourism center or tourism, and that they would do movies and they would do some live events. none of which this is really equipped. It's not equipped for live events. It's equipped for movies, but not even equipped for movies anymore because Miami-Dade College, which owned the projection equipment and everything you needed to run it as a movie theater, they've taken that out. That was their property. And now what happens is you go to Kaiocho on a Friday night, on a Saturday night, when the street is activated, where it's happening, where there are people, where there is culture, Domino Park is full, Ball and Chain is full, people are, it's this vibrant, exciting street. The Tower Theater is shuttered. I mean, literally shuttered. It looks like an abandoned building that as recently as a month or two ago was a vibrant cultural arts center. And now, like the rest of the landmark gems of this city, the Olympia Theater or Gusman in downtown Miami.
We don't have very many.
The Miami Marine Stadium, which Jessica wrote so beautifully about years ago. The Coconut Grove Playhouse, where plays like The Diary of Anne Frank and Waiting for Godot made their
debut. It does feel culture. It feels like culture is dying in Miami. Not that, I mean, Miami Beach used to have a bookstore. Doesn't even have that anymore. And it just feels a bookstore. Had a bookstore.
Who can afford the rent with books, dude? I mean,
but it does feel like Miami culturally is dying one landmark at a time in this respect.
In no small part because culture is so siloed now, right? There's so many niche, you know, kind of ideas. None of us all want the same thing or the same entertainment or the same sport. But that's always been the great thing about Miami is that, yeah, nothing is for everyone, but there's always something for everybody. And I feel like that even that is in many ways diminishing, unfortunately.
Ari Cohn is next. He is beefing with John Ruiz, and Billy loves beef. Anyone beefing with John Ruiz? I love beef, too. Not this kind of beef as much as I like the other kind of beef.
Delicious.
Where's the tweet?
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Ari Cohn makes a return engagement here on the show. I think all of this is just so that Billy can eventually get into taking calls from University of Miami fans who would like for you to stop going after John Ruiz, their sugar daddy.
I just want you to lose that Life Wallet sponsorship, Dan.
You continue to agitate the University of Miami fan base with the people you call cane holes.
They're not representative of the Canes fan base. They're a subset of the Canes fan base.
Regardless,
for the record.
Ari is on with us now because what has happened now with John Ruiz? The first time he was on with us, First Amendment defamation lawyer, the first time he was on with us is because John Ruiz had threatened him with frivolous lawsuits, and now he has delivered a frivolous lawsuit?
Well, so I don't think we've ever had a guest on again this quickly before, but we have an immediate follow-up. So I think it was just a few weeks ago Ari was on the show because he got into Twitter beef with Miami Hurricanes NIL sugar daddy John Ruiz over a retweet of an article, a blog post about the Ruiz family connections to George Santos, a.k.a. Anthony DeVolder, a.k.a. Katara Ravash.
Big giant liar guy.
Yeah, big giant liar. The talented Mr. Santos, Congressman Cunanan, whatever you want to call him. Apparently, the Ruiz family helped with some early donations to the Shell Corporation down here in Florida that helped to finance, perhaps illegally, his congressional campaign. They made some donations to the campaign. Ruiz himself is trying to distance himself from that and threatened everybody who retweeted this story with a lawsuit for defamation. And Ari Cohn, a renowned First Amendment and defamation attorney, jumped in and said, okay, I'll get in on the action. I'm going to retweet it, and then I will pledge to represent pro bono anybody that this completely incompetent lawyer, John Ruiz, sues. And Ari said he was all shit, no Gibbon. And now we're back because there's a little bit of shit in this Gibbon. What happened, Ari? What's the latest?
Last Friday, I get a, I guess we go back a second and say that it kind of morphed from a ha ha ha, you can't actually sue people for retweeting this, into a John Ruiz claiming that I'm violating professional ethical standards by swearing at him and being mean on Twitter.com and then kept posting articles showing lawyers getting sanctioned for swearing, except those were to opposing counsel and there was no opposing counsel to be mean to because he hasn't sued anyone. I don't actually have a representation agreement with anyone. So we're just two jamokes talking on Twitter. Well, one jamoke and one something else. Anyway, last Friday, I get a notification that John Ruiz has filed a bar complaint with the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission. And I shit you not, this thing is 126 pages with the exhibits, all about me being mean to him on Twitter. Like, can you imagine something more, like, both hilarious and pathetic at the same
time? What is 126 pages? What's in there?
Literally screenshots of literally every single tweet in the conversation with various highlighting and whatnot. It's basically Ari's greatest hits, or now that's what I call Ari Volume 1.
So explain to me, is there any legitimacy here to any of these complaints about? So let's set aside for a moment that this guy, who's supposed to be the CEO of a publicly traded company that missed its earnings by 99%. Instead of focusing on that, he's filing a 120-page bar complaint against you for being mean to him on Twitter. But what are some of the points that he makes? Because last time you kind of went through one at a time the idiotic, I mean, his total ignorance about the First Amendment and defamation law.
We're not going to do 126 pages of that. Just give us the highlights.
So he seems to maybe potentially realize that he has to frame it as me representing someone and being mean to him in the course of representation, because he makes this wild argument that because I said, if John Ruiz sues you for retweeting this, I will represent you pro bono, that I therefore magically represented people, perhaps not understanding that in order to represent a client, the client has to actually agree to it first, and there has to be something to represent them for. And he hadn't actually sued anyone. So I just really don't know. I feel bad if he put one of his associates on this poor person should have learned a lesson in saying no to their boss. He literally just goes on and says, well, he's in representing a client because he said he would represent them, and therefore this makes it a concern of the bar. But it's literally just pages of whining of this guy was mean to me and was denigrating me. One of my favorites is in our first conversation, he was going on about how he has, you know, experience with ethics and he knows about ethics. And he ended that tweet with, I sat on a grievance, which I still don't know what that means. But I found a picture of him and I did a little meme and I wrote, I sat on a grievance, a picture of him like in a sitting position. And I'd also tweeted, did you sit on that grievance naked, allowing it to absorb into the bloodstream? Because that would explain your tweets. He republishes this meme in his complaint and then says, by incorporating such text to my photo, Mr. Cohn suggests an improper sexual innuendo towards me, specifically that I was sticking something into myself as I was naked while I sat. Now, I literally just said you sat on it, like skin to blood absorption. I don't know why John Ruiz's mind immediately went to butt stuff.
Rectum.
But the fact that I got him to write, I was sticking something into myself in a bar complaint, is victory enough for me. It's all just hysterical whining about how I was mean to him and I used profanity on Twitter. Oh, heavens to Betsy.
Ari, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the worst, how bad lawyering is this document, this 126-page bar complaint against you many states away?
It's quite bad. It's like at least an 8.5, but probably higher than that. I mean, the guy literally just sits here and includes irrelevant precedent about someone who left nasty voicemails or wrote nasty emails to somebody on the other side of litigation to them. That doesn't exist here. And I, no matter how hard he tries to make me saying I will represent people pro bono, like an actual attorney-client relationship between me and who knows, because he hasn't sued anyone, I'm sure that the ARDC took a look at that and scratched their head a little bit.
I just don't understand this. Like, it's like sort of like jock sniffing of like college boys, not only their jocks, but like real lawyers too. You're like a real lawyer. You're a serious person.
I don't want to date you, John Ruiz.
Yeah, just like when you donate to the university, you don't get to take showers with the football players. Sorry, dude. They're not going to let you take showers with them. I don't care how much money you spend to sniff their... Maybe they'll let you stand in the laundry and sniff the jocks of real athletes. But now it's the same thing with real attorneys. You're like a real attorney, and why would you want to spar with you? And also, what happens now? You just got notified last week that you got a 126-page bar complaint against you in the Illinois Supreme Court. Are you scared? Do you get a hearing? Do you get to reply? What happens?
Well, first of all, you have to consider this like with who John Ruiz is. The kind of the most accurate way I can think of to describe him is his whole personality is based around wanting people to think that he is the best and successful and well-liked and all that stuff.
What?
Beats the shit out of me, man. You know, you could see it in his tweets when he's puffing out his chest and saying, I know what I'm doing. You're just a kid with 13 years of experience. You don't know what you're doing at all. It's who he is. But to your second question.
Yeah, are you in trouble now? Do you get suspended? Do you get what happens?
So I got the notification, but the notification came with the very succinct, we have determined that no action is warranted. We have so advised Mr. Ruiz. I got the complaint at the moment they determined they were going to not do anything about it because it was clearly frivolous.
Wait a second.
So I didn't even get to respond.
So wait, he filed sometime in the last couple of weeks.
On January 12th.
He filed a 126-page complaint. And then on the same day they notified you about the complaint, they also said, it's totally frivolous. We find no offense and we're throwing it in the toilet.
Yeah, they summarily disposed of it. No investigation, nothing. But of course, because I wasn't representing anyone. He wasn't theoretically representing even himself in that case. He hadn't sued anyone. There's just no room for the bar to come in and say, you being mean to some, you know, shit gibbon on Twitter is any of our concern.
Speaking of which, last time you were on the program, you did a top five of your, like, just best uses of profanity. Let's hear that. These are Ari's top five profanities in the Twitter thread.
Number five.
Dumb f***, gonna keep dumb f***ing.
Number four.
You're a bully and you're an idiot. Nobody is scared of your f*** stickery.
Number three.
Brain dead douche canoes.
Number two.
Taxidermied shit gibbon. Number one. Incompetent f- Muppet.
Yes. Solid.
And now we have the top five best put downs in Ari's latest tweef thread on John Ruiz.
Are you picking these or is he picking them? All right. Number five.
Sleazy, ethically challenged bottom feeder.
Number four.
This dumb f- really doesn't understand what attorney-client relationships and scope of representation are. I would be very nervous if I were one of his clients.
Number three.
A total turd burglar.
So a stealer of turds. Somebody who burgles turds. Yes. Okay.
So, and hoards them.
Okay. So why would one burgle?
Perhaps
this?
Hires them as attorneys.
Why would anyone? Okay. Number two.
Ari infers that John Ruiz has nothing, quote, inside his head other than moldy seaweed.
And number one.
If John H. Ruiz doesn't want to be told that he's an incompetent dildo, maybe he should stop doing incompetent dildo things like this. Better luck next time, asshat. And our outside looking in, others receiving votes, the mic drop and end of Ari's thread this time is a clip from Robin Hood Men in Tights.
From this day forth, all the toilets in this kingdom shall be known as John's.
Asshat is such a good term because it's someone who is like gone to the place where they keep their hats. There's an ass there, and then they put it on their head.
And you know, Ari, he's in his next bar complaint, he's going to go right to butt stuff with the asshat line.
Listen, he's the one who's thinking about the butt stuff, not me.
Thank you. An excellent dismount there, Ari.
So to speak.
Thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We do a breathtaking amount of losing here on Because Miami. There are not a lot of victories. Billy comes in here, he rails and he rails and he rails, and then he goes home defeated. But because Miami has a rare victory to report to the audience in South Florida.
I think we have a cart from last week of Roy going to me. We don't have it yet, but we need to tee it up. Roy goes, nobody's listening. I think that was the
Well, but that's not true. It's not true that nobody's listening. It's they're listening, they're absorbing, they're ignoring, and then corruption is winning. But you have a victory here.
Yes.
Finally. What is the victory?
Finally, a rare Because Miami wins, some good news. You might remember the story we covered last year. So Miami-Dade County Schools has partially reversed their ban. And some students will get to see the 20th anniversary production of Nilo Cruz's Pulitzer Prize winning play, Anna in the Tropics, which is now playing at Miami New Drama at the Colony Theater on Lincoln Road. The Cuban-American playwright is the first Hispanic to win the Pulitzer in drama, and he's a Miami-Dade Schools Hall of Fame inductee. But you might remember last year we talked with Michelle Hausman, the executive director, creative director of the theater, and he told us that the school board's El Departamento Ideológico del Partido Comunista de Cuba sent censored the play last fall. According to the Miami Herald, they wrote, quote, after it was wrongly pegged as too sexual and violent, even for 18-year-olds, a controversy that should have never been except for the divisive state of Florida politics. But Fabiola Santiago wrote, now public school seniors and students who are part of visual performing arts programs will attend 3 matinee shows. Parents will have to sign a permission letter that specifies the content of the play in order to comply with the recently passed Parental Rights Act. Still, the sexual scenes will be toned down for the student performances, a compromise necessary to win parental and educator approval, which Cruz, who is also directing this production, was willing to do. So they walk back some of the censorship.
Some of the censorship.
Still, I'll settle,
still,
dude.
Still a diluted product, still partially censored,
no.
Censored than it was before.
The very limited sexual content that was in the show, even toned down, it's not essential to comprehending the story.
Before we get out of here, I want to tell the audience that Billy Corbin has been wanting to take calls around here from argumentative people, from people who might think this is an echo chamber.
All you proud girls and boys out there.
That doesn't tolerate different thoughts. So keep an eye on our social accounts for the telephone number. We will take calls with Billy Corbin next week. But somebody has snuck in before the Miami moment that's
really
going to close the show here. We are finally hearing you've wanted to hear from Mayor Francis Suarez.
Is he on the line?
For a long time. And I am told that Francis Suarez is eventually, he seems to have gotten pissed off enough with your constant bashing of him over the weeks and months and years to have called in.
Mr. Mayor?
Is this Billy Corbin and Dan Liptard?
Yes, Dan Liptard is here, Mr. Mayor. What,
hey!
What a surprise! Miami Mayor Ponzi Postalita, a.k.a. Francis Suarez, a.k.a. Mayor Crypto Bro.
What, bro? I'm calling about that song you played last week.
Oh,
that's
yeah?
What I'm talking about.
What'd you think?
Yeah, I loved it, bro.
What?
Loved it.
Really?
All about me, right?
Why would you love that? It was insulting you.
Oh, the video was super great, bro. It was all the pictures of me. I loved it. It was like looking in a mirror.
Oh, I see. It's an ego thing. You just love looking at yourself in
Wait
the mirror.
A minute.
I see.
This doesn't sound like, this does not sound like Francis. This sounds.
Absolutely. No, sometimes late at night, bro, when my family's asleep and I'm all by myself, I sneak to the computer and I Google myself. I Google myself so hard, bro.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm glad that you liked our little song.
I was wondering if you could help me make it my ringtone, actually.
Oh, sure. What kind of cell phone do you have?
It's a T-Mobile Sidekick 2, Sidekick 2.
Really? You have a Sidekick 2?
Absolutely, bro. I took it to a kiosk at the Dayland Mall. I got it all vejazzled, like Paris Hilton.
Vejazzled? Really?
Beautiful, bro.
A Sidekick.
Oh, in Miami, we don't stand in the way of any kind of tech, bro, okay? We are a tech hub. And today, I'm asking the U.S. Conference of Mayors to sign a Sidekick Pact.
Uh-huh.
In Florida, you're free to use any cell phone you want. We ban books, not phones.
Okay. Well, you recently delivered your state of the city address. What did you tell the audience about the state of the city?
Oh, yeah, that's right. The state of Miami is Florida.
Okay, so you keep saying that Miami is going to...
This is not the mayor.
You keep saying that Miami is going to, quote, achieve functional zero homelessness, end quote. What does that mean? I still see tent cities popping up under I-95, overpasses in downtown Miami. There's real Skid Row vibes.
Skid Row, that's what my dad calls my underwear.
Mr. Mayor, in a recent interview with Fox Business, you said, in Miami, we are definitely not woke. There's definitely no wokeism here in Miami. What are you talking about? What does that even mean?
Here in Miami, bro, we are working diligently to get woke down to functional zero.
I don't think that that's what that means. Okay, I don't know if you were listening to the show earlier, but what do you have to say to the good men at Circle of Brotherhood who are trying to do work in the black community and you promised $1 million to help them and you have not?
I don't see color, bro. In fact, I don't see black people at all. They're totally invisible to me. And that is the official policy of Miami government.
Well, that sounds about right. That is on brand. So let me ask you, last January, happy Black History Month, by the way. Last January, you asked all the mayors in the country to sign a crypto pact. But since last April, you've had no tweets about crypto.
Functional zero tweets.
That's not what that means, dude. That's not what that means.
That is suspicious, though. That is suspicious.
Look, this is what's happening, okay? We're in a temporary slump, right? This is not a crypto winner. It's a movement, right? It's the future. See, what's happening now is we haven't been able to find enough new investors to buy crypto at higher prices to pay the early investors, right?
That's not the way that works.
No. See, I'm super smart about this, okay?
You're super smart.
Okay. What we do is we tell everybody, if you get in now, you'll double your money.
Uh-huh.
And then you get those people to buy after you buy. You move right up the side of that pyramid, bro, right?
It's a trickle. Okay, so the new investors pay off the old investors. You know what that sounds like, Mr. Mayor? That sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
Not if we do it right, okay?
Not do it right. What does that mean?
Bro. As long as it keeps going and you find the next guy to buy in, we're good, right?
What?
As long as we never get to functional zero. It's only a Ponzi scheme if it stops, right, bro? And that's why we need more government regulations.
More government regulations? You're the one who said that you don't want government regulations for years. You said that publicly and repeatedly that regulating the crypto space will stifle innovation.
Right. Not exactly, bro. There's been too much regulation and not enough, right?
What?
The government should be like referees in an NBA game, bro. They should be there, but not really paying attention.
Okay, speaking of NBA games, Mr. Mayor, how do you afford all of those courtside Miami Heat tickets at the arena formerly known as FTX?
That's a good question.
Okay, as I said on CNBC, okay, I bought Bitcoin in November of 2021, right?
Mm-hmm.
As of this all-time high of 67,000, right?
Right.
Each, and now they're worth about, 23,000 today.
Okay.
Right? So I made a huge profit.
No, that's not how that works. No.
Billy, you're such a hater. You hate math, right? I'm super smart, okay? That's why after I got kicked out of Belen, I went to Immaculata LaSalle, which is also my drag name.
Your drag name is Immaculata LaSalle?
That's a good name. It's a good name. It's a good drag name.
This is why you don't understand how we made so much money for the city with Miami Coin.
Oh, really? And Mr. Mayor, what is the current value of Miami Coin?
Functional zero.
Oh,
that's what I thought. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't think that was the mayor. Tech Hub, bro. Good talking to you. Thank you, Francis. We leave now, Billy. We leave the people with a new segment. We did not get to some things like animal services falling apart in Miami-Dade, high anxiety in Miami's already gentrified Little Haiti because developers are snapping up properties at auctions. We didn't get to affordable housing falling apart in Miami Beach.
Neither has Miami Beach gotten to affordable housing.
Or horses patrolling spring break on Miami Beach. Maybe next week, but we close this out with a new segment. What is it? It's the Miami Moment?
It's the Miami Moment. I want to remind everybody to watch the socials for the show because you, just like the mayor, can call in to the show next week and raise hell. And this Miami Moment is from DJ D-Bag. No, it's Guy. He's a local realtor who does music videos on YouTube. I don't knock his hustle. It's pretty funny. He did a Miami Beach.
You do knock his hustle when you call him DJ D-Bag.
Well, when you see it, you tell me you can call in next week and name that DJ. But he is a realtor. He has a YouTube channel. He did a music video about Miami Beach, about Pinecrest of all places. And his latest is that Brickell Life here is your Miami Moment. Woo!
That Brickell Life everywhere. That Brickell Life, everything downstairs. That Brickell Life, city lights that glare. That Brickell Life, you wanna be there. That Brickell, that Brickell Life. That Brickell, that Brickell Life. That Brickell.
There's something about that Brickell vibe that brings me to the level where I wanna be.
Oh, yeah.
Work hard, play hard, that's the motto here in Brickell. Get off work, head to the bar. It's in person, LinkedIn. You'll find Drake, a sexy fish, or Komodo hanging with his clique, or meet Bad Bunny at Gecko. So many options for you to go. Walk down the street, looking for a store. Brickell City Center has all you need and more. But wait, with so many things to do in one place, why would you ever wanna leave?
Never.
That Brickell life, it's often everywhere. That Brickell life, everything downstairs. That Brickell life, city lights that glare. That Brickell life, you wanna be there.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.